Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Gridiron Podcast. It's season two, episode two. We took a little hiatus due to busy schedules, and we're finally back talking about the NFC North. That is going to be our main topic throughout the podcast from now on, as well as a few other changes, including us being able to allow guests going forward, starting this season, as well as the upload times of the episodes. We were uploading previously at 6 p.m. on Thursdays, and now it is going to be moved to 3 p.m. on Thursdays, so you guys can look for episodes at that time. So let's get started with week three matchups for the NFC North. Obviously, let's start up with one that is going to be tough for you to talk about, Mike. The Green Bay Packers against the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, boy. You know, Nick, if this were me 2 or 3 years ago, I would be sitting here fuming. It definitely would have ruined my week. But, you know, I've learned to accept as a Packers fan, there's going to be one or two games throughout the year that the Packers just lose. And you scratch your head and you go, how do they lose to that team? This was one of those games that they thought they could come out and touch the field and win the game. It looked like the team hadn't practiced. And that's honestly disappointing considering coming off of Thursday Night Football, you know, you have over a week to prepare for this matchup. You should handle business and you should be sitting at 3-0. Instead, you come out. The Browns defensive line played really well. So they whooped the Packers offensive line. They didn't stand a chance. Couldn't get the run game going. And Jordan Love honestly didn't look that great either. I mean, but the problem, honestly, it seemed like it was more of the coaching, which was really interesting just because Matt LaFleur in weeks 1 and 2, we saw play action, you know, throws over the middle for 10, 15 yards, more than that. And versus the Cleveland Browns, they didn't test any of that. They threw checkdowns, screens, you know, little, you know, 5-yard tight end boots to, you know, Kraft, but there was nothing challenging to that secondary. And in my opinion, weeks 1 and 2, you had a more challenging secondary. So I was kind of confused as to what the play call or the game plan was going into this game. So honestly, Nick, when I knew in 3 minutes, 30 seconds left and Love threw that pick, I knew the Packers were coming out on the wrong side of that game. So honestly, I'm not surprised, but they don't deserve to win it. And, you know, some teams need a humbling loss. That might have been it.
Yeah, and to kind of piggyback off of that, I know last year we were talking about Matt LaFleur not being a creative play caller. And we saw that this week with, like you mentioned, a lot of the checkdowns, a lot of the screen passes. And I even saw a clip on TikTok of Myles Garrett getting through the offensive line. And all of a sudden you hear, Jordan, run!
Yeah.
So it turned into the offensive line for Green Bay becoming a meme. And going into this game, I saw the Packers for the last 2 weeks being like the star-studded team, obviously beating my Lions in week one, which was a great game by the Packers, not so much by the Lions, and then going into Washington and handling business there. So it was interesting to see how Green Bay would respond to a Cleveland defense who, not taking any credit away from them, they do have some talented players, especially in the secondary as well. And then you add Myles Garrett as well into there. But a lot of it was the play calling and also being able to stop the run. I've noticed these last 3 games, Josh Jacobs has not been very impactful for the Packers, as we saw last year where he was averaging 8-9 yards a carry. I think right now he's only averaging like 3 yards per carry, which is a huge downgrade from where he was last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And touching on that offensive line issue, the Packers got Zach Tom back And then the first play of the game, he goes down, re-injuring his oblique. So that wasn't good. So then we stepped in with Jordan Morgan, and then also Aaron Banks was also injured. So we had two tackles who didn't play their positions. So it was kind of a mess. Also, 14 penalties. 14. And I think half a dozen of them were on the offensive line. Three were on Josh Morgan alone for false starting. There was a crucial third and one situation, and Jordan Morgan false starts. You can't do that. You just cannot do that. It doesn't help when your offense is trying to get something going and you're taking a false start penalty to move 5 yards back. And also, I don't know what was also the plan toward the end of the third quarter. Usually, the Packers are a team that lets the clock run out. On a third and one or third and two, if I'm not mistaken, before the third quarter ended, they didn't have to call a play. But Jordan Love ran the play, and instead of throwing the ball away, he takes a big sack for like minus 5 yards again. So instead of, fourth and one on the 50, you could go for it. Instead, it's fourth and six, and you have to punt. So little things like that just made the game almost impossible. But you know what? On the bright side, the defense still played well. They were still able to get to Joe Flacco, create pressure, havoc. Parsons did well. Rashawn Gary. Can't really blame the defense for this one. They did their part, and the only times that points were scored on them was getting put in bad positions by the offense. So at the end of the day, this was a terrible loss for the Packers, but sometimes that happens, you know?
Yeah, and I got one quick question for you about the Packers. Now, we've heard about the whole Micah Parsons back issue, right? And we've been seeing his snap count going down from week one. He had the most amount of snap that he played in week two, and then he went down by a lot in week three. Do you believe that there is truly an issue with his back? And if so, how much do you think it will affect him going into, I guess, the harder stretch of the schedule for the Packers?
Yeah, I noticed that too. Absolutely. I think there's a problem there. I think that, not having Micah Parsons when you're paying him $200 million is kind of pointless. I mean, we want Mike out there. And obviously, I want him healthy. I don't want him to be injured. But for the money you're paying him, he's got to be out there. And he is a good football player. But do I think any player is really worth that much money? No. But I do think it's a problem because not having him out there is so critical and so crucial. And how you said it'll affect the, bigger games, like coming up against his former team, Dallas, we want him out there. And I'm sure he wants to be out there too, but whatever this problem is, it's got to be solved because we want him at his full, strength, capability. I do like him, out on first week, for instance, he was out there mostly on third downs. Great, but you'd like to see him out there as much as possible. So I do think this is crucial for the rest of the season. See how this back injury lingers, and we'll see what the Packers do.
Yeah, and especially because you don't want him to potentially injure it
Right.
further, especially with it being his spine, as Adam Schefter reported. If it's a spine and he ends up, say, breaking a vertebrae, he's out for the rest of the
Right.
season, maybe even next season. So, me as a Lions fan, I say, yeah, like, don't have Micah Parsons out there because he stopped the Lions week one. But at the same time, it's like you don't want him to injure it further. Just as a football fan, having a name like Micah Parsons is huge. So, moving into the next game, let's talk about the Chicago Bears against the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, Chicago coming out with a win. I really wanted to go into this week and trash talk the Bears, being like, you guys lost to the Cowboys, the worst team in the NFL, the team that Jerry Jones said, I'm going to trade away Micah Parsons to stop the run because that guy's a freaking lunatic and doesn't know what he's talking about as an NFL GM. But The Bears come out and win 31-14. And me as a Lions fan, I didn't like that because Ben Johnson ended up getting a win before Aaron Glenn. So there's a lot of issues there, but let's kind of take a little bit of a deep dive into this game. Obviously, two of the lower standard organizations. I'm just going to keep throwing out shots against these two teams. You'll see it all season. But especially with how the Bears have been looking, we went into this season saying potentially all four NFC North teams make the playoffs, maybe besides for the Vikings with the changes that they were having. But the Bears' wide receiver core has been a huge question mark with losing Keenan Allen in the offseason. How do you think they've been matching up against teams, in your opinion, and especially against Dallas, who has a questionable secondary? And then we can even talk about, obviously, Dallas now losing CeeDee Lamb due to injury. So going into that game, Chicago looked decent. I would say pretty 50-50 on both ends. And then Dallas just looked like an absolute train wreck.
Yeah, I mean, this was a must-win for both teams, honestly. You can't really fall to 0-3, but the Bears did get it done. And you know what the thing, if you're a Chicago Bears fan, is you saw Ben Johnson finally throw in the creativity, the Dan Campbell go for it on the fourth and goal. You know, you saw the nice flea flicker to Luther Burden for his first NFL touchdown. So, you know, there were some Ben Johnson-esque teams in there, which was nice to see if you're a Bears fan. But, you know, I thought first I was watching the first drive by the Cowboys and Javonte Williams is, you know, made a big run. I was like, here we go. Cowboys are going to come out swinging. And Tyreek Stevenson, who ever since the Commanders game of last year has been god awful, made the play of the game. I swear this was a momentum swing. Took the ball out of Javonte's hands and recovered it. And it was Bears football. I was like, there's no way he just made that play. I mean, that was such an insane play. And I think also the Bears as a whole, I think, had four takeaways. So they did really well in the secondary, especially for not having Jalen Johnson. I think TJ Edwards is still injured too. But they stopped the run and they did really well. So, you know, maybe this is a little like momentum swing game for them. So we'll see what happens going forward.
And for all the video watchers, the reason why I made that face about the flea flicker, you can agree with me on this. That was the slowest developing flea flicker I have ever seen, where DeAndre Swift almost got tackled in the backfield before he flipped it back to Caleb Williams.
Listen, you got DeAndre Swift, man. He's not a Jahmyr Gibbs or a David Montgomery. He's DeAndre Swift, dude. That DeAndre Swift has issues as a whole, but
he's a guy that was on the
Lions.
He was in the Lions system.
That's why they got rid of him, though. But the other thing too that was nice to see was finally Ben Johnson incorporated the tight ends, which week one and two he did say he wanted to get them more involved. Obviously, Loveland you take as a first round draft pick, so you definitely want to get him involved, and he did that. Unfortunately, he did leave with an injury, but, you know, he got Cole Kmet involved, so that was good to see. There was a lot of good takeaways, if you're a Bears fan, from this game. Also, from this game that was important was defeating Matt Eberflus. That was the biggest, that was the funniest thing I think I've seen, was beat Matt Eberflus.
Yeah, especially because we both know what happened. They could have had that Thanksgiving game last year against the Lions if Matt Eberflus knew how to call a timeout.
He did so many unbelievable things last season, dude. It was so funny. Gosh.
So let's go into, I guess, the team that has been somewhat surprising me in the NFC North, that being the Minnesota Vikings. Now, they took on the Cincinnati Bengals, who Joe Burrow is out, obviously, for 3 months due to a toe injury. And the Vikings came out swinging, beating the Bengals 48-10. Now, last year, we were saying all year, the defense is losing the Bengals games, right? So let's take a little deep dive into this as well, because not talking about the Vikings, but talking about the Bengals early on in the season when Joe Burrow was still playing, you had Ja'Marr Chase barely putting up numbers still. You had all of the wide receivers not really doing much for the Bengals. Now, obviously, you re-sign Trey Hendrickson, or they adjusted his contract, I should say, basically giving him a bigger salary for this year and then making him a free agent next season. Now, going into this game for the Vikings, right, you don't have J.J. McCarthy due to injury. And we were talking about, oh, this is going to be J.J. McCarthy's season. He goes down with an injury. And they put up 48 points against the Bengals. And they looked good doing it.
Yeah, I don't know, though, because how much of that was Jake Browning and how much of that was, you know, quality football? Because I'm not going to lie, I checked my phone. It was 21-0 so fast. And when I saw that 86-yard mm-hmm. return pick six, I was like, what is that throw? I mean, Jake Browning did not look good at all. I'm not taking any credit away from Brian Flores and that Vikings defense, because they do have players. They do have players that I'm, you know, concerned about. But
yeah,
you're talking about Isaiah Rodgers, who I knew was on the Vikings defense, but you haven't heard of this guy until this past week. This guy got two interceptions, yeah, one pick six, forced a fumble. You know, I don't know, man. It was too, what's the word I'm looking for? It just wasn't a fair game to assess the Vikings on, I think. Because last week, week two,
okay,
you know, you really saw the Vikings play against the Falcons at home, first home game, and they lost 22-9, where the Falcons basically just
22-6.
22-6. You know, you just got pantsed at home. And J.J. McCarthy, mm-hmm, I know he's out, but he didn't really look good through three quarters until the end of the Bears game and the whole entire Falcons game. So how much, you know, of that was just really bad on Jake Browning and the Bengals offense?
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. It was really a defensive, I would say, masterclass,
yeah,
for the Vikings. And we know Brian Flores, he's potentially going to be up for a head coaching job next year, seeing as a lot of these teams are having coaches on the hot seat, especially the biggest meme that is out there right now with the Dolphins, with Mike McDaniel saying, we had to come away with a win by winning the game, which is the weirdest explanation on how to win a game. You say the way to win a game is you score more points than the other team. Well, of course, that's how you win a football game. But Brian Flores potentially going to be up for a head coaching job next year. And this was truly, like I said, a defensive masterclass for the Vikings, who had a weird offseason going into this year, but they kept a lot of the key pieces and they came up with plays. And then Isaiah Rodgers, obviously, coming in with the two picks, a forced fumble. And going into this game, I had no clue who he was.
Yeah.
So
I think we'll see with the Vikings going forward. Carson Wentz didn't have to do much. So I think this coming week, you know, we'll have to see what they do. They play Pittsburgh, and, you know, it's not an easy game playing Pittsburgh. So we'll have to see how Carson Wentz does. I know it's not J.J. McCarthy, but still the Vikings as a whole. So we'll see going forward. But I want to talk about this game, Nick, because I want your opinion, because I thought this was a big win for the Lions, because instead of going down to 1-2, the Lions are 2-1, and they beat the Baltimore Ravens at home.
Yeah, so going into this game, me and you actually talked on the phone prior to this game, and you asked, like, who do I have winning, right? And I said, realistically, the Ravens.
Yeah.
Hopefully the Lions. because you have a running attack like Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, who are very tough to stop in the option play. You have Rashad Bateman. You have DeAndre Hopkins, who, even though he's up there in age, he still has a lot of skills. You saw that sideline catch that he had. And one thing I was not taking into effect is Al-Qadeen Muhammad, who got 41 total tackles.
Yeah.
Including 4 sacks.
Wait, am I mistaken by this? Since you're a Lions fan, you'd know this more than me. Wasn't he close to not making it on the roster last season?
He wasn't on a roster until the trade deadline.
Yeah, okay.
The trade deadline is when we got him. He was sitting on the couch. He was not on an NFL roster.
Right.
So seeing him do that, and then Hutchinson forcing a fumble out of Derrick Henry, who now has 3 fumbles in 3 games.
Yeah.
And the Lions coming out with 7 total sacks as a team, including one where you had 4 players sack Lamar Jackson, making it a 3rd and 26. And the offense, week 1 had me worried about the offense.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think me and you can agree with this, that it was basically a honeymoon period, right? You have a new offensive coordinator. You have a new defensive coordinator. You had no clue what to expect going into that week 1 matchup against the Packers. But as they've been meshing together, like Jared Goff having more, what's a good word for this? More confidence in John Morton. And Calvin Shepard truly fitting into that role, coming out as a linebacker's coach for the last 4 years, including he retired as a linebacker for the Lions. So you have that aspect of the new coordinators, but you had David Montgomery bust out a 72-yard run, which I really think he should have scored that, but he was too focused on the Jumbotron with Hamilton and who was the other guy? I'm trying to think of the other guy.
Starks?
That was chasing after him. No. Number 44.
Not sure.
So chasing him down, and he was looking at the Jumbotron above him. And Jared Goff looked good. St. Brown looked good. The offensive line is what I've been really focused on in terms of the offense this year, because the whole talk about the interior linemen was the huge question mark. You have 2 really young players, with Tate Ratledge being a rookie and Christian Mahogany being in his second year. And obviously in the center position, you have Graham Glasgow replacing a future Hall of Famer in Frank Ragnow. And they've been looking really good after that week 1 matchup. They've been able to have those assignments where they need to. Now, I will say this. There were a lot of missed opportunities for the Lions. You had 2 dropped interceptions that led to a touchdown by Baltimore, one being from Brian Branch and the other one being DJ Reed. And like, I'm sure you were surprised about this. The play calling from Baltimore, they had 1st and goal at the 5-yard line. They run the ball twice, get stopped. And then all of a sudden, you want to run a play action pass on 4th and goal on the 1-yard line, and Lamar Jackson fumbles the ball.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, going back to those sacks you were talking about, not to take any credit away from the Lions, because they definitely did get to Lamar Jackson, but I'm all for extending a play, but there are times when Lamar should just throw it away, and he just eats it. And, you know, I don't get it personally. I mean, I'm all for extending a play, but you got to know when to cut your losses and just to when to throw it away, you know. There, a lot of sacks could have been avoided on Lamar's end, but, you know, I guess that's just who he is, and you'll live and die by him. So, you know, the interesting thing too, Nick, with this loss, this is going into the Ravens more so. They play the Chiefs this week, and these are two powerhouse teams that are both 1-2. So whoever's at 1-3, you know, it's not looking too good. So this was a critical game for the Lions to win. And yeah, they got the job done. So, and as you said, the offense is clicking. They scored 90 points in the last two games. So that's definitely something to look out for. So I'm, you know, still counting the Lions in. I never counted them out by any means after week one.
Yeah, and to kind of, yeah, sorry to cut you off, but one thing that I was seeing is one, the Lions have scored the most points in the NFC North, the most points in the NFC, and they are tied for second for the most points overall behind the Ravens.
Oh yeah. I mean, 52 is going to help you by any means.
Yeah.
So
And I'll mention this too. A lot of the like play calls by John Morton, you saw some of that Ben Johnson play calling, that flea flicker thrown by David Montgomery. You have Amon-Ra St. Brown lining up in the backfield for a toss to Gibbs. You have at one time you had David Montgomery on one side of Jared Goff and Jahmyr Gibbs on the other side of Jared Goff. And I mentioned this to you multiple times. How are you going to stop that type of offense where you have both star-studded running backs who now lead the league in NFL history for most touchdowns by running back teammates with 11 in total throughout a season, right? 11 total touchdowns. Or sorry, 11 games with both of them scoring touchdowns. That's an NFL record by a running back duo. And I'll say this now too. Dan Campbell is now 4 wins away from being the all-time Lions head coach in wins, which is crazy to think about because he's only been here since 2021. And for him to only be 4 wins away is insane. And he is now 14-2 in primetime games. So that's an even bigger stat. And you stop Lamar Jackson, who has been the best quarterback against NFC teams, where he was what, 14-2 or something like that, or 16-2, some sort of insane record. And this is a grudge match from a couple of years ago, where this was one of their 5 losses a couple of years ago, where the Lions went into Baltimore and lost 36-6 or something like that. So for the Lions to go into Baltimore Monday night and come out with a win like that in a must-win situation for both teams is pretty insane.
yeah.
But let's get off of the NFC North real quick, because I want to ask you this, and I think we might have the same answer, but what team has surprised you the most this season out of any team in the NFL?
Ooh, let me think on this. So far, surprised me the most. Well, I mean, it definitely is the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, I did not think they would be 3-0 right now. I definitely didn't think they would beat the Broncos. And, you know, putting up, I mean, I know they played the Titans, and who they play week one, I completely am blanking. Wasn't a good team, I don't think. That was the Dolphins, yeah. Yeah, I definitely didn't see them beating the Dolphins either. And putting up 30 points, making the Dolphins look silly. I mean, although the Dolphins are now a dumpster fire, but nonetheless, I mean, the Colts look good. And but honestly though, they have a challenging game this week. I think they play the Rams. So, it'll be a test for them. I don't think they'll win, but you know, we'll see if Daniel Jones is in some sort of honeymoon phase. But yeah, I think they'll be a playoff contender at most. We'll see though. That AFC South is definitely open. So, we'll definitely keep an eye on them, 'cause they've definitely surprised me the most. Now, I want to also answer this with a team that has surprised me for the worst reasons, and I think that's the Houston Texans staying in that division. They I don't know what's going on with that offense, but CJ Stroud doesn't look good. That offense just looks, I mean, the offensive line is having issues, especially when you trade away Tunsil. So I don't know how much disservice the organization is doing to CJ Stroud, but you know, it's not looking good. It's not looking good there.
Yeah, and I guess I'll kind of answer my own question. I would have said the Indianapolis Colts as well,
Yeah.
but I'm going to pivot a little bit. And I'll actually say your Green Bay Packers. They have definitely surprised me the most. Obviously, coming out against Detroit and putting BTA against the team that was pretty much known for that last year,
Yeah.
and going into Washington and just mopping the floor with them. And obviously, getting Micah Parsons is a huge step up from what they had last year. But I'll also mention a little bit of the wide receiver game, right? Like you lose Jaden Reed, obviously, to injury, but Matt Golden has been somewhat stepping it up as a rookie. Same with Dobbs. Dobbs has been pretty much
Yeah.
everywhere. And I'll say the team that has surprised me the most in terms of bad is the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll say I was going to go with the Houston Texans. That is another team that I was going to say is surprising me for the worse. And even the Dolphins, but I kind of figured with the way that Tyreek Hill was talking about the Dolphins in the offseason, I kind of figured they were going to be kind of on a downward trend. But I will say the Kansas City Chiefs because obviously a team that has made what four Super Bowls out of 5 years. And I can get into the whole wide receiver room where they basically have
Yeah.
nobody, but you don't expect a team that made the Super Bowl last year. Obviously, they got smacked by the Eagles, but you don't expect that team to nearly go 0-3. They could have lost the game last week, barring a couple of key plays by the Chiefs.
Yeah.
But I will say you don't expect a team like that to even start 1-2. I would expect a 2-1 start or a 3-0 start. But
Yeah.
they've definitely surprised me the most in terms of
I
disappointment.
actually want to throw in an honorable mention since you bring up the Chiefs and this the Chargers. The Chargers are 3-0 right now, and they have two good wins, and including one over the Chiefs and one over the Broncos. So they're also an interesting team. You know, I thought personally coming into the season the receiver core was weak, but they're making it work with what they have, and they got a running back, but Najee just went out for the season, so that's unfortunate. But they got Hampton, and that kid, he looks promising. So we'll see what happens with the Chargers if they're like a legitimate contender. Because I think for the past few seasons they've been right there contending, but they haven't like made it over the hump in the playoffs, losing to the Chiefs and Bengals, etc. But yeah, honorable mention. I think the Chargers is a good shout too.
Yeah, and I'll ask you this. Early prediction, really early prediction. It's week three, going into week four. Who comes out with the NFC North crown?
Ooh,
Realistically.
realistically, it's between the Packers and Lions, I think. I think the Packers, I actually don't know. Jeez, because with that Lions win over the Ravens, it's really tough. Because the Packers do have the Eagles, they do have the Ravens still. So I'll say the Packers. I just got to be a believer in the Packers.
Hey, I'll say the Lions because I think realistically, both the Packers and the Lions are going 2-0 against the Vikings and Bears. I think realistically speaking, I think it de depends who wins that game in Ford Field.
Yeah, it'll be tough.
If Green Bay wins at Ford Field, I think Green Bay takes it hands down. I think they'll go undefeated in the division if they win in Ford Field. If the Lions take it, I think realistically it comes down to whoever beats the Eagles.
Yeah.
I think it's going to come down to that
I mean,
because not just record in the division counts anymore. So.
yeah, no, the Packers do have some tough games. They still got the Eagles at Denver. Cowboys, I'll even still throw in there. The Cowboys, that's no shout, but they are 6-0 at AT&T Stadium. So another home game for the Packers, but they're still a tough team. So we'll see. I mean, it'll be really interesting, especially because they are playing a competitive division, the NFC North is. And this season will be awesome. I think it'll be electric. So we'll have to see going forward. Nick, I want to talk about one more subject before we close out here, and
Yeah.
that is the New York Giants benching Russell Wilson for Jackson Dart.
Yeah.
And I just want to ask you personally, because even though I just saw this today, Russell Wilson says he's not hanging it up. Do you think Russell Wilson should hang it up? I think this is the end of his career because after the last season of Seattle, went to Denver, dumpster fire, 1 year at Pittsburgh, one and done, 3 games in New York. He's awful. It doesn't look like you can do much with Russell Wilson. So I think he's at the end of his career. I think the Giants should cut him. I don't even know if he's valuable as a backup anymore. Maybe if the Bengals are desperate, they'll trade for him. But do you think this is the end of Russell Wilson?
Yes. I think he was done after Denver.
Yeah.
I think realistically he was done after Denver. He led the Steelers to a couple of good wins. Like he started off, what, 4-0 for the Steelers. So I was like, oh, there's a little bit of hope for Russell Wilson. But yeah, that guy's a dumpster fire and a half. But I will say, you mentioned the Bengals. I think even the Bengals aren't that desperate to pick up a guy like Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson should hang it up right now. The Giants should cut him, free up cap space, so then you can go get a wide receiver to pair up with Malik Nabers or an offensive lineman to protect now your franchise quarterback in Jackson Dart. Or an edge rusher to go and pair up with Abdul Carter.
Yeah.
I think those are three key essentials for this Giants team. And I'll mention something else, right? They also have Jameis Winston, right? I think you have Jackson Dart as a starter, right? And have Jameis Winston as QB2. So then even though Jameis Winston might not be so smart in the head, he still knows
Yeah.
football. He still knows how to win. So have him kind of mentor a player like Jackson Dart to be able to mold him into the future quarterback for the Giants. And I think realistically, Russell Wilson should hang it up. He should be done right now. Call it
Yeah.
quits. You had a good run in Seattle. You almost won a Super Bowl. Marshawn should have had the ball. Just saying. But yeah, I will say that Russell Wilson, he should have been done after Denver.
Yeah, I have to touch on your point about Jameis Winston being the backup. I think, if people were to say, well, Russell brings that veteran leadership, it's like Winston does, though. Winston's there. He's been in the league for
Yeah,
how
Winston
long?
does too.
There's no point having Wilson in the building, in my opinion. And, we'll see what the Giants do at the trade deadline because they might get rid of some players. But nonetheless, no matter what, Brian Daboll, they were allowed him to draft Jackson Dart. So you have to develop him, whether he's ready or not. So, got to give Daboll a fair shot. So starting now doesn't matter about the Giants season. It's about Jackson Dart. So we'll see what they do. We'll see how they turn out for the season. But yeah, I think Wilson's done, man.
I think you mentioned Brian Daboll. I think going into this week, he was on the hot seat. I think he was one of those coaches that were on the hot seat. But I think now that you're going a different direction in terms of quarterback, his hot seat kind of gets a little cooler.
Yeah.
Would you
Yeah,
agree?
absolutely. I think that definitely after the Chiefs game, the GM probably walked into Dable's office and said, "You're starting Dart no matter what." So it buys Dable some time. You have to let Jackson Dart develop under Dable to see if, he's able to develop Jackson Dart. So it does buy him some time.
And that's going to be the end of the episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. Once again, every Thursday at 3 p.m., we'll be talking about the NFC North. And you might have some bickering between Mike and I between the Packers and the Lions, especially when it comes down to that game in Ford Field. So thank you guys for tuning in. You guys can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music. Go follow our Twitter at GridironPodNFL. Yeah, we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you for tuning in.